As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself a Gun.
A Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. No, he didn't do it.
Nope.
Sometimes I wait for
that one.
Sometimes I wait. Just a friendly reminder to please give us 5 stars and review on the Apple Podcast Store. I know I say this every week, and every week I mean it, so please actually do it, because I like reading the reviews. It's the only time I really get to feel special, so please do that. Also, patreon.com/frogcast, the second tier, the $8 tier is Pod Yourself a Shout Out, and we do have some new patrons today, so we'll be shouting you out at the very end of the episode.
You didn't even put them on the document so I could read them.
Oh yeah, my bad. I'll do that. I've had a busy day, dude. I'm a busy man, and
had to take your nana to Green Grove.
I had to take my nana to Green Grove. Turns out Min and Cookie are total cunts. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, I would like to introduce our guest today. Now, our guest today is a very special guest. Not only is he a very funny Los Angeles-based comedian, but he is also the producer of Pod Yourself a Gun. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up loud for Brent Flyberg.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yes, thank you. Applause. This is
yeah.
Great to be here. Longtime producer, first time guester. Can't wait.
Yeah. I'm very excited to have you. You know, it's you've been producing this podcast. You've been doing a great job. You know, you help me out every week, and you write the best descriptions.
We just figured that you catch more Flybergs with honey.
Than
you do with vinegar. Wow. And we thought we'd have them on finally.
That's good. You know, I don't think I've heard that before. That's impressive that you found a new angle on Flyberg.
What's great is that is also him tying it into this episode of The Sopranos. That's something that that Ralphie
you
says,
you gotta mark this
really
one. That's
impressive.
The best segue I'll ever do.
That really is. But the problem is it's not a segue, because we have to do the thing where I intro and ask, hey, Brent, you like The Sopranos?
I do. I like it a lot. I hadn't seen any of it until like maybe a year and a half ago. It was a thing, like my girlfriend at the time, we started watching it like Christmas, I think 2019. Mm-hmm, and then during the quarantine, like early quarantine, just finished it all in like a couple of months. So it's still pretty fresh, but this is like the second time I had seen this episode.
And then your love died somewhere along the line after that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think The Sopranos was the only thing keeping us together, if I'm being honest. Once we ran out of that.
If I'm real with you, that is a thing. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I have been in relationships before that I've been like, if we can last through this full series of The Sopranos, we can last through anything, you know? And actually, I'll be real. It hasn't turned out to be true. I've gone through The Sopranos with a couple of girlfriends, but in this case, it is now turning out to be good.
Some couples have a baby to try to keep the relationship together. Like, you need a series. Don't need to have a child. You just need to have a prestige TV series to keep you together.
Yeah, yeah. And for some people, you know, it's like 6 feet under or like fucking, you know, The Wire. But, you know, for me, it's The Sopranos. The Sopranos and The Room. That's my gauge for whether or not I'm going to really get into a good relationship with somebody. Like, if you can watch The Room and get why it's really, really funny, or watch The Sopranos and get why it's really, really funny, then I fucks with you. That's how it works.
Oh, I guess. I've still never seen The Room. Sorry to hurt your feelings.
No, it's fine, dude. It's fine. It's your fire, but it's fine. No, like, it's just like, it's one of those things. I mean, I'll be honest. Most people watch The Room and they think it's funny. So it's not really a good test. But I feel like it's a good way of weeding out people who, like my brother, for example. I tried to show him The Room and he was just like, I get it. It's bad. And he left. And I was like, see, I need someone... I need someone with a bigger attention span. And I need someone who watches Sopranos and isn't like freaked out by the titties and the meat.
And the violence. Yeah. Yeah. And especially like if you watched it with someone who liked it, but didn't think it was funny somehow, that would be a huge red flag.
Yeah.
Dating someone who just thought Tony was cool. It's not something you see. There's not too many women who are Scarface poster people.
Who they just think Tony is cool and they're always doing pranks on you. Yeah, that's bad.
There's not too many.
We're such Adriana and Chrissy. Like, that's us.
You're like, what? What do you mean? You know how they're like cool and quirky and it's like they're junkies and dying.
And yet still one of the healthier relationships on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdly enough, it is, but you know, The Sopranos contains multitudes, dude.
Yeah.
But yeah, before we get into this episode, we must first, of course, as we all know, play the theme song.
Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast.
Fuck yeah. All right, yeah, ladies. And
that hits different when you're in the guest chair.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Yeah,
dude.
Rules. Yeah.
I mean, it's a prestigious ass fucking guest chair. We've had people from such podcasts as Chapo Trapo and Cummy Tummy and Hollywood Murder Guys. You know. So
my favorite band, Sleeve Six.
Yeah, Sleeve Six was here doing their song Cut My Life Into Pieces. This is my last Eve Six. All right. So today, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about from season 4 of The Sopranos, episode 8, Mergers and Acquisitions. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Sure. I mean, they were going in depth for a little bit with the synopses, and then now they're back to the terse, curt ones, you know, like we're like, ugh. Like they're trying to give us the blow off or something.
They're mad at us because we keep clowning him.
Yeah. Paulie has to take care of some rough relationships for his mother, while Tony's fancy for a fellow horse fancier lands him in trouble with Carmella. I mean, there's wordplay.
That's interesting. That's kind of fun. That one was a solid B plus on that synopsis. It's pretty good.
Double down on fancy.
Yeah, dude. I mean, that's not bad. Sometimes maybe they're upping their game. What if they hired Brent? They hired you because they were like, he's really good at descriptions on Pod Yourself a Gun. Maybe he can do them for IMDb.
I mean, HBO Max, if you're out there, I am still technically underemployed. So help me out.
Yeah,
dude, you know what would be sick?
You don't really believe that we make our producer pee in a bottle, do you?
Yeah. Wow. Who could believe such a story?
I want to pee in the bottle.
Yeah. You like peeing in a bottle. You like that we have an app that controls, you know, how much you're taking notes during the show. Vince, what was happening when this episode was coming out?
Oh, well, I think what you're saying is that you cannot evaluate any art outside of the context in which it was created. You know,
sure.
And
was.
So for that, we go to the Remember When machine.
Walk, walk, daddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop. Remember then.
Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
That's right. We're going all the way back to November 3rd, 2002. You know, there was planes flying over southern Iraq for practice runs.
The practice planes.
Threats and responses. The military, U.S. pilots in Gulf use southern Iraq for practice runs. When Navy warplanes roar off the flight deck of this aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf, their official mission is to patrol the no-flight zone in southern Iraq. But they also have an unadvertised task, practicing bombing runs against Iraqi targets.
Imagine the practice that takes to fly a plane and drop the bombs. Like, you know, I'm not trying to denigrate the career of a guy who bombs people, but I'm just saying, like, you know, practicing it feels funny to me. You know, like, do they have is they water balloons?
It's hard. They drop. It's hard to fly the plane.
Yeah, what are they dropping?
I don't think. Yeah, I mean, that's the question. Are they opening up and just candies flying out? You know, just
party like, flyers.
One day, they just drop Nicka wafers and they're like, oh, I'd rather it was a bomb.
We really weren't fooling anybody with, you know, this whole buildup to the war. We spent six months being like, you better not make us do war to you. Better not make us do it. Why are you bombing yourself? Why are you bombing yourself, huh?
This podcast has been a real reminder of how much time, because in my memory, it was like 9/11, war in Iraq, like
immediate
the next day. Yeah. I forgot how much time. Yeah. We spent just like in the news every day being like, we're going to do it. Don't make us. Yeah,
I remember don't all make this us do very it. Well, because it coincided with my like study abroad time, which is the worst thing that can happen to you is when like the U.S. is being like a giant dick in geopolitics, and then being outside of your home country just at that point. Ugh.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it would have been worse if I was anywhere but Australia. But like every once in a while, you know, someone would like be excited because I was American, and then I knew that person
that's even
sucked.
Weirder.
Yeah, like it was guaranteed that person was really shitty, and I didn't want to talk to him.
That's not a war on terror. This is a war on terror.
Yeah.
You know, because he's Australian.
I lived in Australia for a little while in like 2012. So this was like peak Obama. And people Oh, they loved. Did you vote for Obama?
That's sick, though.
I did. And they were, they were so, it was the best time to be living abroad, honestly.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know. That's a good time. I remember all the stories about people being so stoked on Obama and being like, God damn it, why couldn't I have been outside of the country at this time?
Yeah, no, you picked the wrong time to be. Yeah, because you've got the worst of both worlds. You know, you got most people thinking you're just a pig ass American, which fair enough. And then you've got some people who are very excited to meet a fellow fascist.
Yeah.
They're just like, Guten Tag, my good sir.
Well, it wasn't my fault. Like when I left, you know, everybody felt sorry for us. And then I got there as soon as it was like, oh, yeah, we're going to go bomb somebody. And not great.
Yeah.
Not great.
Yeah. People just coming up to you. Hey, how's that war on terror going? Not so well, huh? It's too bad. Kangaroo. All right. Yeah. You know, I've done my. What else was happening?
This is a good one. Assault on Wall Street misdeeds lifts Spitzer's U.S. profile and makes enemies. Elliot Spitzer, New York's attorney general, who is seen by some as the scourge of Wall Street, says he has given no thought to his political future beyond standing for re-election tomorrow. If that is true, then he is the only person in New York politics who is not. From the time he took office in 1999, Mr. Spitzer showed a daring eye for high-profile cases and a talent for publicity. But his assault this year on the seamier habits of leading brokerage houses has vaulted him to another plane, a national figure with a higher profile than many governors and senators. Fortune magazine.
What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah. Well, he could be caught soliciting prostitutes by sketchy financial transactions, which doesn't seem fishy at all.
You know, it just goes to show you that all New York politicians are scumbags. And
I think
Spitzer
was the good one. He just happened to be like a sex weirdo, and it fucked everyone because of it.
Yeah, you know, that's true.
Collapsed Spitzer and Wiener in my head. What did Spitzer do?
So Spitzer was the one who was actually, like, he was the scourge of Wall Street. He was like actually like leading the charge.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah. He was like doing cool things. And then he got caught by, supposedly because of these, I remember writing about this in grad school, but it was like he had gotten caught for, they actually talked about it in this episode when Carmela is giving cash to different brokerage houses, and she's doing it under $10,000. And if you do it over $10,000, it will trigger a suspicious transaction report, and people will actually
look into
it.
Right, you have to report it to the IRS or something.
And so Spitzer knew that, and all his payments to prostitutes were under $10,000, but they got flagged as suspicious anyway for unclear reasons, and no one has ever said why.
It's like... Yeah, it's like when you and all your friends go to a bar and they're like, "How old are you?" And everyone's like, "We're all 21." And you're just like, I think something is going on here.
But was he like using public funds, or is this one of those things where it's like he was just a sex pervert?
I think he was a sex guy.
I think he was just a sex guy.
Yeah, he was buying high-class prostitutes, which like, I mean, fucking...
If you're going to be a fucking politician, of course you're going to be a sex weirdo. They all are. There's no other reason to be in politics other than to, like, be a sex weirdo.
And what's wrong... You know, what's so wrong with it if she, you know, she's making 10 grand or at least 9,999.99
in two separate installments? Look, that's why prostitution should be legal. Like,
yeah,
I don't give a shit if some guy's... soliciting prostitutes, who cares if they're of age?
Yeah,
who gives a shit?
Everyone's consenting, there's money involved, everyone's having a good time. Yeah, you know, what's the big deal? But Spitzer was the one who had the I think it was my first experience, other than I don't even know if Hillary did this with Bill, but it was my first experience of like a politician doing one of those like press conferences with a really angry wife in back pretending
like,
that everything's chill.
Like that's even worse than cheating on her. Yeah, that's even worse than cheating on her is like making her be there during that fucking press conference.
You're just like, all right.
I think Kobe Bryant was technically the first one, but I understand why you might have blocked that out, Matt Lieb.
I don't think about that one.
Yeah. And that was not a consenting adult. I don't know if you guys remember.
All right, you know, just let's let dead dogs be dead or something. There's a phrase there.
Sure, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Well, he's
dead mambas lie.
He's raping the angels now.
Oh, come on. 81 points.
Yeah.
In one game. It's a lot of points. You can't do that.
Sorry. Yeah, no. He was bad. I think it's okay to say that he was bad. Anyway, on Wednesday of this week, of this week in 2002, Jam Master Jay from Run DMC was murdered. R.I.P.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. Yeah. I remember being like, now? That was my thought.
Right.
It was like, seems kind of late in the game to murder him. Like, you know.
Yeah, you think you make it to however old he was and you're... not gonna get
it's kind of like and I think this happens in the same year. It's kind of like when the lead singer of Alice in Chains ODs. I think he died in like 2002, and I remember going, well,
yeah,
because again I was just
same
like
with Scott Weiland.
Oh yeah,
I guess so. Jam Master Jay was only 37, which is
yeah,
he seemed old.
Was it
when I
was it in a recording studio too? Is yes that where it happened?
Yeah
I think so.
37 still too old to get murdered in a recording studio. You got to be like 25 or under for that to make
37
sense.
Is too old to be in a recording studio, let's be real. Unless you're podcasting.
Hey,
if you're
now
trying to rap at that age, let's be real. Come on.
I think he was
only
producing.
Podcasting
anyway.
Even so,
the top movies in the country were The Santa Claus 2,
hell yeah,
well-known sequel, The Ring, and I Spy.
Nice.
Top pop song in the country was Lose Yourself by Eminem. Mom's Spaghetti. Oh,
just absolute classic. Such a good hit.
It was. It was a great song, dude. 8 Mile, it was one of my greatest guilty pleasure movies. Anytime 8 Mile was on cable, I was watching that whole thing.
Yeah, it's one of those movies. It's like Shawshank. If it's on, I'm watching it. It's not as on as much as Shawshank is, but it's like, it's just one of those movies where you're just like, yeah, I liked it. What can I say? It
Greg
was good.
Bull,
it was a good movie.
This ain't cool. Me, you, and him, we went to the same school. He's banging school. My mom. Yeah.
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 Cheddar
Clarence
Bob when he shot himself.
Have a real good marriage.
Yeah.
All the great. Time. All the yeah. time.
RIP Brittany Murphy. Left us too soon.
I know. Yeah.
Top rock song was You Know You're Right by Nirvana.
Oh, right. This is when they had like a best of or something came out, and yeah. there was like a new single that was like a deep cut that never got released.
Mm-hmm,
and
that was the one that Courtney Love kept in her back pocket after she had him killed, that she was like, I'm going to release this in like 10 uh-huh. years and make a ton of money off of it.
I mean, not even 10. That shit was 8 years. She couldn't wait. She's like, I need that money. All that Man on the Moon money dried up real fast.
Yeah. Parody, allegedly.
Allegedly.
I don't think Courtney Love has litigious lawyers to her credit that I know of. Maybe she does. I guess we'll find out.
I imagine she does. She feels litigious to me. I don't know why. There's something about her that just screams litigation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
There's something about... Oh.
Well, so that was the Remember When machine.
Oh, well, that's good. Good Remember When machine. A lot of great stuff happening. And yeah, let's talk about this episode, Mergers and Acquisitions.
Another bad title, gotta say. That's not a great title.
Horrible title.
Yeah.
Horrible. I mean, I did spend a good amount of money. I spent a good amount of time wondering what, like, I mean, I get it because you've got some mergers and you got some acquisitions. You know, the mergers are fucking... You know, when they have sex.
I mean, Tony's definitely acquiring a Nugomar and acquiring a racehorse.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I kind of think that's it. It's just one of those things where you're like, yeah, because Carm is interested in finance and because, you know, Tony has acquired Valentina. But yeah, before we get into all of that, people should know the individual things that happened on this episode, which is why I present to you the Bada B stories, which this time, you know, I feel like I peeked at my Oh Girl cover, the one that was sped up, you know, because I don't think anything can be better than that. So once again, I'm going a cappella.
Okay. Ooh, I love it when you go a cappella.
Well, fuck thanks. A after Papa our... Doc, fuck a clock, fuck a trailer. That's an awfully hot coffee pot. Should I make some decaf? Probably not. Valentina pranks like Tyra Banks, prays to prey on higher ranks while Ralphie sits alone and wanks. Snuffleupagus, Carm's had enough of this, finds a nail in the coffin and fills her coffers up again. Tony psychoanalyzes like, why though? Does Ralphie want to get analyzed like a psycho? Think. Bates Motel, trapped in his own personal hell while the skeleton of his mom beats him up with a bell. Furio wants that cookie like Nucci Galtieri. She's small, but her son is scary. Polly Wally wanna doodle all over that noodle of the high school principal who's soft like strudel. Cock-a-doodle-doo. Union dues. Cancer don't respect nothing. That's the Bada B story, my dudes.
Very good.
Thank you. Thank you.
I give this freestyle a 7.
Wow. Unbelievable.
And did you know we were going to talk about Eminem, or is that a coincidence?
That actually was a coincidence, dude. Damn. I just, I wanted to go a cappella and fucking, it's just, that's the thing. Synchronicity.
He knew he only had one shot.
Synchronicity. Synchronicity, watch Felicity on KTLA 5 right after Dawson's Creek.
All right.
You know, Vince, you usually enjoy me more.
I liked it.
I need the positive reinforcement.
It was great. I love it when you do the awful hot coffee pot rap. It's weird to think back to 2002 when Eminem was like legitimately good, and now you listen to him and you're like, what the fuck happened to you, man?
It's weird because his, like, the older he gets, the more his higher pitched voice is like, why are you doing this, bro?
Well, the more he thinks that, like, the key to being good at rap is not being like clever and interesting, but like talking fast. Like, he's like, no, I need to rhyme better and talk faster. It's like,
it's rhyming more. His whole thing is rhyming more. If you rhyme more, then you're a better rapper, you know?
Remember when you were like funny and like interesting? Do that.
Yeah,
I think that's what changed, is he stopped being funny and it became more like edgelordy.
Yeah.
Like it's
I mean, he started kind of getting like political, but more so he got personal. And he's always been relatively personal, but it always felt legitimate. But like now his like whole vibe is, I don't know, maybe he just embraces too much being a middle-aged recovering addict.
I think some people get to a certain point in their career and all they hear is like people talking shit about them and they feel compelled to constantly respond. Kind of like David Simon on Twitter, where it's like, bro, you don't need to call everyone a cockholster. Like, we don't, cares about those people. Like, you made
a bunch of amazing
shows.
Eminem was like the first like Glenn Greenwald, like any rapper, people you've never heard of talking shit, and he would just like mention, you would name drop them in a song and then they'd be famous and you'd be like, you didn't, you could just ignore them, you're doing great.
Yeah, that's because it was like someone would casually use his name and he would release a 4-minute track. Spitting hot fire for 4 minutes about how much he hates Juice WRLD or XXXTentacion or whatever. Yeah, it's fucking like, you don't need to do this.
Yeah, Juice WRLD's gonna die soon, dude. Don't worry about it. All of these guys are Xanny addicts.
I don't know why.
Well, you know, all these guys, they're addicted to Xanax. Anyways, so.
I gotta say.
Let's talk about.
Yeah, so we can talk about this episode. That's what you were gonna say. I gotta say, this was a especially like after the relative disappointment of last episode, this one really brought the hot fire. Like, it had a full arc. There was like multiple laugh out loud lines. It was classically like the mafia is both scary and pathetic and petty in equal measure. These guys are petty pieces of shit and they might kill you, which I really feel like gets to the root of the mafia and what's good about the show. And especially every single character is a huge piece of shit and it's great. That's all the things that I want out of The Sopranos, and this one delivered, I think.
It showed to me their kind of like uniquely scumbag way they are, and it's like they're scumbags in different ways. Like, they all hate women, but it shows how they all hate women differently, which is like appreciated, because you know, like most of them just hate women kind of the normal the polite way, you know, they're constantly cheating and, you know, kind of talking down to them and whatnot. But then some are like Ralphie and they dislike women, so they sexually need to be humiliated by them. So it's
they can bottom from the top,
dude.
Gonna go into that, like, I feel like she got it backwards. Isn't he topping from the bottom?
No, because he's bottoming. He's bottoming.
Yeah, like, he's in control.
Yeah, he's bottoming, but he's in control. So he's actually, he's the top while he's bottoming, no?
No, but he's bottoming because he's being penetrated. So that's like yeah, so he's bottoming from the top, right? Oh, wait, topping from the bottom?
He's topping from the, because he's on the bottom, but he's actually the top.
Semantics, I don't know, it's hurting my head a little bit. My brain hurts. I'm trying to, it's like a math problem.
Yeah.
Like, who is top and why is, what is definition of transitive property of bottom?
If a top leaves Cleveland at 8:45 going,
when does he bottom? Yeah. What time will the top bottom if he's going 60 miles per hour in that butthole?
How long will it take to rub his dick raw with a cheese grater?
Greatest line.
Which, pretty incredible. Like, the amount of, like, kind of kink shaming that goes on in this episode is, to me, is the perfect amount. It's the most appreciated, because, like, in general, obviously in real life, I would never be so crass as to kink shame someone. But I do feel like we've come to a point in the kink shaming conversation where it's like, I'm not trying to shame anybody, but some people's kinks are weird and funny, yeah, you know? Yeah. And that's way better than your kink being dark, you know? And so I say, I like the amount of kink shaming they do in this episode. I mean, they go from the ridiculous, like rubbing his dick with a cheese grater, to pouring hot wax on his balls. And just,
but this is,
I
like,
appreciate it.
This is very much like a proto Army Hammer situation. Cause like the whole fun of the Army Hammer story was like, oh yeah, oh, finally this boring guy turns out to be a sex weirdo. And he wants to, like, he says he wants to eat people, which was really fun. And then, you know, like a week into it, someone's like, oh yeah, he also like raped me a ton. And you're like, God damn it. Why couldn't we just.
Well, I know. Same with Ralphie. Why can't there be a sex weirdo?
Yeah, same like, with Ralphie.
There's gotta be a...
Someone is just a pure weirdo. Nothing malicious. Yeah. Just, you just like weird sex stuff. We want to hear about that. That's fun.
Because you can be a weird sex pervert without being like doing things non-consensually. Like, it exists. Mm-hmm. It definitely does. But the more cases that come out, and I'm not saying this because I'm like, I'm one of those people, but let's be real, you know? I'm a weird guy, but it's like we're all that weirdo to someone. Everyone's got different levels, you know? But like, yeah, the more cases that come out about like, oh, someone has got some weird sexual proclivities, and then an accusation comes out, the more that people are just going to, you know, like start moralizing about weird sex, you know, like online people will be like, if your boyfriend wants to do anal, there's something misogynist about it. And you're just like, no, stop. Some people just like weird. There's nothing wrong with that. Some people just want someone to put something in their butt. That's just feels good.
What I love about it is Tony is just, it's really just, Tony just wants to know if this counts as sex.
Yeah.
That's all he wants to know.
Yeah. No, but have
does
you guys
this
like,
count?
Have you guys like done it though?
Yeah.
We
should, because we should, our property right. And you mark your territory by penis and vagina. What does he say? Penis and vulva.
Oh yeah. That's the best malapropism in the episode. She could technically not have penisary contact with her vulva, which is he's trying to get clinical with like, if his dick has not been inside of her, I'm good. Then I'm clean. Yeah. You know, he doesn't want to share parts. He doesn't want to be Eskimo brothers with Ralphie, which I mean, fair enough, you know.
Yeah, but let's start at the beginning. I mean, we got ahead of ourselves. So the episode starts with Furio, and dad has the cancer, and as he says, cancer don't respect nothing.
I have a clip of that.
You're coming back.
I hope so. Immigration, they make problems.
Well, maybe Tony can help with that.
What are you still doing here? I thought you were flying out to Naples.
I just to drop off the shirts from Batsy's guy.
All right, but you should be on your way to see your old man.
Cancer is everywhere in his body. Cancer don't respect nothing. You know, he started in his
car. You need any money?
There's something about like the fact that this is probably the first time Furio has ever started a sentence where he's clearly going to say something personal to Tony. And Tony is just like, no. Yep. He's like, he starts off this episode super not in the mood for other people's mishigas. And
I respect that. That's the great thing about Tony is that even when he's a piece of shit, he's somewhat relatable. And he's just going through this thing where he's like, look, I don't need to hear about cancer and death this early in the morning.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
Yeah. No, yeah, he's literally just going, I will give you money to stop talking about your dying father.
Yeah.
Like, that is, it's pretty wild. But, I mean, I appreciate that. Sometimes you just don't want to hear it, you know? Which is a shitty position to be in if you're the one who has, like, tragedy has befallen. Because you're just like, who can I talk to about this stuff without them pulling a Tony on me and trying to give me money? You know,
especially because he like hangs out with Tony all day, every day. Yeah. It seems like, and he's like the one, yeah, the one time he's like, "Well, my dad." It's like, "Yeah, shut up and take money, leave me alone."
Yeah. Meanwhile,
we are not friends. We are coworkers. I'm your boss.
Right? Exactly. This is unprofessional. I have to talk to HR about
you're
this.
You're supposed to be the supposed to be the angry foreign headcracker, and now I got to hear about you know, you're yearning and you going back to Naples and burying your dad. Oh.
What are you, a person or something? Get out of here.
Like, whoa. I've seen you murder like three people in front of my eyes. And one of them was like an Asian woman. Like, in these times, you know, I've seen you do hate crimes. And now you want to talk to me about cancer? Meanwhile, Furio is, I love the line, cancer don't respect nothing. Because... Why would it? Like they always look at everything through the lens of respect, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, they're fucking meatheads. And it's like almost he would expect cancer to be like, whoa, I would not, I'm not going to fuck with the Don, you know, or I'm not going to, I got to obey the rules. Like as if cancer is just another soldier in the mafia. Yeah. It's pretty great. But yeah. Tony doesn't want to talk, and he's not into it. And this scene immediately leads into one of the funniest Pauly scenes in an episode filled with Pauly just being the fucking best. With
a great Pauly episode.
Oh, such a good Pauly episode. We get into the fact that like Furio, because he's not going to, you know, he's going to be leaving for Naples, is not going to be driving Tony. So Tony is like, don't worry, I'm going to get my own driver. Everything will be fine. And we cut to Pauly driving Tony in one
worst?
Of my favorite.
You think getting drawn into Furio's bullshit is bad? Try getting drawn into lifelong bachelor slash mama's boy high school dropout Pauly. Holy shit.
Oh, man. To, you know, especially because Pauly is just known for not knowing how to shut the fuck up. And
he immediately goes to colostomy bags, which is like the least appetizing.
He opens with colostomy bag.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a clip.
Oh, okay, all right. We'll play that.
Yeah.
Not for nothing. You think he's going to have to shit in the bag?
You think he wears a bag? Who wears what? You know, a colostomy bag. Furio's old man.
How the fuck would I know that?
Because my ma, maybe not, has to get one.
Can we not talk about this?
And we can talk about any topic you like, T.
Good.
It's just that now, with Morrow squared away to go to Green Grove.
For fuck's sake, Pauly. Everybody's gonna get old and die.
Am I driving you tomorrow, too?
No, I'll drive myself.
Oh, God. I mean, they're so not made for each other, right? As friends or coworkers. Like, I feel bad for Pauly because I feel like he is someone who is very emotionally open. He's raw, and he's like, he needs someone to talk to.
He's a gangster.
Too much,
but
he's pride to go to therapy.
He's also a lonely old bachelor. Like, you've met a version of Pauly, like, in every bar or coffee shop, and there's some guy there who doesn't have anyone else to talk to, and he mm-hmm. needs an ear, and it's gonna be you.
And if you sit down, if you sit down next to him, count down to 5 minutes until he brings up a colostomy bag or his mom or something, and you're like,
so true.
When I was like, you know, single, by like living by myself, in a work from home job, like in San Francisco, where I got all these like, you know, bars and coffee shops to go to, I every once in a while I'd have one of those moments where I was like, oh man, why don't I just go like become like a regular at a bar? Go, like, I can go to all these places alone. I don't need anybody. And then you always meet a Pauly there, and they ruin it, and you immediately have to leave. Like, you sit down, you're like, oh, this is great. I'm having a drink, and then by like, but usually before the second drink, there's going to be someone who just like starts talking to you, and it's the
yammering
kind of person that their neediness is just the most off-putting thing ever, and you're like, I will flee. I will chew my arm off to get out of here.
You can see it in people's faces. I feel like I have like a good sixth sense for strangers, you know, who are about to like cry. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, if you talk to them, if you dig even a little bit, like I have like Crydar, where like there's people who I know, like don't get in a conversation with that person. They want one desperately, and they desperately need to talk to someone, which is why you must avoid them like the plague.
Yes.
So really,
I think living in cruelty. Living in a big city like teaches you that skill, because I'm sometimes around like my Fresno friends, and I'll see like one of those people like at the bar, and I see him, and I'm like, oh, I'm staying at least 10 feet from this person, and then my friends that are just like, they'll just like wander into it, and I'm like, no, what are you what are you doing? Yeah. There were so many red bro, flags. And it's
like, yeah, like do you not know not to talk?
I'm not good. I can't say no to people. So like I'll get stuck in really long conversations. A homeless guy kissed me on the neck the other day.
What?
Yeah. True story.
How did he get close?
This guy, Gary. So like I know some of the people in my neighborhood.
You know Gary. Okay.
I know Gary. Gary's cool. And he was like, I don't know, dude. He was having a rough day. And he was saying, like, he was like mumbling and like clearly emotional. And at one point he was like, can I just have a hug, man? Can I just have a hug? And he's like,
oh.
I don't know. He looks cleaner than most of the people I know. So it's like, whatever, I'll give you a little. And I'm vaccinated. So I was like, whatever. And
he's closer than most of the housed people you know.
Yes, exactly. And he kind of gave me like a Christian side hug was what how he approached it. So I was like, yeah, this is fine. And then he just like swung in and put one right there on my neck. And I was like, all right, please, you know, we don't have to do that. That's it's fine. It's fine, but no thanks.
Yeah. I'm like you too. I can't say no either, but that's why I have developed the like the sixth sense about when it's going to happen, so I can avoid, like, if they actually trap me in the conversation, I have a hard time noping out of it. But that's why I do everything to avoid it before it starts.
Right. Yeah. I'm the same. I can't if it starts, then I'm too polite to stop it. But that's why I'm literally always walking around with headphones in and looking down at my phone, because I'm like, nope, you're not going to trap me today, lonely people.
Yeah, I used to before smartphones, I would, you know, bring a book places. And then every once in a while, you get someone who's so bold that they're just like, hey, what you reading?
Oh, God. You've got it. That's like one of those things where I'm like, you fucking sociopath.
Yeah.
Like, you know exactly what you're doing. That's like a pickup line for friends, you know? You're just trying to pick me up right now. I'm not interested in a new friend. I don't have time.
Not that kind of friend. So Tony's driving with Polly. And then, you know, because this is all part of the plot that Tony's trying to step away from doing like actual business with people. He's trying to delegate. Right.
So, which I think is kind of the weakest. It's interesting. It's not the weakest plot, because it doesn't really appear all that much in it, but it's to me, it's the one I have the least to say about, because the episode is mostly about, you know, Ralphie's kink and Nucci having trouble at Green Grove and Carmela wanting to like get some money. And Tony's storyline kind of dissects mostly with the money and the Ralphie's kink. But the mafia part of this episode is the fact that he's trying to get Syl and Chrissy to be basically doing all the business, and he calls the shots, but they do all the in-person meets and talking. And the most interesting part about
globally, which means sitting at the mall looking sad,
which is the best thing about it, is the fact that like he doesn't know what to do with himself. He's reached this level where he's no longer like a, you know, he's no longer, he hasn't been a middle manager for a long time, but now he's like boss, like boss to the point where he doesn't get near crime. Mm-hmm. And because he's boss of the mafia at the decline of the American Empire, all he can do all day is go to the mall and like hang out near a smarter image and like check out the jewelry stores there. You know, it's like, it's the most beautiful distillation of this declining culture, both like both the American, you know, general culture and also the mafia culture.
Yeah, and it's like, it's mostly a means to other stuff, but it's funny like to compare it to last episode, which was all about a scam, whereas this one, like the actual mafia drama is like something to do, like you can almost hear the writers yada-yadding through it, where they're like, there's something with the unions and the customs, and and it's great, because like the truth is, like we don't really care that much about it.
We don't care about the intricacies.
Yeah.
And they did a great job, I think, of like making it so that, like the scene where Tony calls Chrissy to tell him all the stuff he has to do. Is not about learning the stuff that he's, you know, about the scam he's running with the Longshoremen's Union or whatever the fuck. It's mostly to show Chrissy being so unprepared yeah. for this fucking position.
So fucking he's unprepared that he has to write on a pillow because he's still in bed with a dope hangover probably at 10 a.m. and.
But mm-hmm. that's a perfect, like, I think last week you guys were talking about how AJ is dumb. Chrissy is smart dumb in that, like, he knows he needs to write this down, so he's going to ruin a pillowcase. Like, if it works.
Yeah. I mean, and I feel for him, too, because, like, being being caught unprepared for a time when you need a pen and a piece of paper is... Full on panic. Yeah. You're just like, but also, this is it.
He thought of like writing on a pillowcase before he thought of getting out of bed. Like, just go and look in the other room. You for sure have a piece of paper in your house somewhere.
I don't know. I feel like Christopher and Adriana are the type of people that may not have pieces of paper in the house.
There's not a single book in that apartment, right?
No, there's no book. Like, you know, and I feel like, you know, Cosette, their little dog, has used up all the newspaper, and that's like there's no paper in that entire house. He's lucky he found a pen. That's my, you know, that's the bane of my existence. But Tony's hanging out bored at malls and doesn't know what to do with himself. So he goes to check on Pyomai, and we get to see that lovely horse again.
Whoa, sweet Pyomai.
Nice. Well, you know what? You should do a parody song once in a while.
Yeah.
And then I could sit there and not laugh. So I'm just kidding. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s, and he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, so he goes to check on Pyomai, and that's when we meet fucking Valentina, the fucking queen of pranks.
The Joker.
Who is, she's the Joker, dude.
Yeah,
she's
a
proto-YouTuber.
I know.
This, to me, like, this perfectly, the good thing about The Sopranos is that it never really shows you, like, how cool the mafia is without showing you all the bad parts about it like immediately. So like Valentina is the perfect double-edged sword of what it's like to have a mistress, where it's like you can like have sex with new women, but guess what, you're gonna have to deal with even more of their bullshit too. And
The idea that it's like every woman, every Gumar, it really is a mystery box.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like kind of literally, like they have a mystery box. You don't know what you're gonna get, and sometimes what you get is cool pranks.
Yeah,
and
you can just salt on your steak sand.
You get stage 10 clinger Gloria. You get You get like Eastern European fucking drama with Arena.
Yeah,
and now you get like the Prankosaurus Rex. Valentina, which is of all the quirks of his mistresses, I think this one might be the most annoying.
Yeah, no, that to me is the most sociopathic of all, because the rest of them have been like people going through either like, you know, emotional trauma or whatnot, and I think that's like, you know, that's not on them to have that going on, but like Valentina is just a crazy sociopath who just thinks that like annoying people is funny, and is like, you know, she's like cornering him at, you know, places and being like, why won't you fuck me at least twice a week? And you're like, holy shit. Yeah. Like this is
it makes sense. He's sort of scraping the bottom of like the mistress barrel, because like his target demo is someone who really wants to fuck a married mob boss, which you're going to get some psychos in that.
You're going to get psychos. It's true. It is definitely that's truer words, Vince.
Living with someone who's doing pranks all the time. Like there's a few things.
I can't think of a worse fate.
Yeah.
Especially these types of pranks where it's like, there's zero thought behind these pranks. What is in front of me that will ruin the next minute of your life? I'll do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and really is like proto YouTube shit. Like it reminds me of one of my favorite prank videos from the internet. It's an early prank video of a British guy pulls up his sunglasses and he's about to start a vlog, and then his roommate just slaps him in the face and he says, "I can't believe you've done this." And it's one of the like, it's not even, it's like, is this a prank? Was this an assault? What just happened?
My favorite was, it was like a high school prank. And it was like, clearly these kids are in like their video productions class. And they're like interviewing this black kid and right next to like this, like one of those big trash cans with the lid. And a guy pops out of it with a mask on, and without even thinking, the black kid just turns and fucking decks him right in the face. And he falls back inside the trash can and the lid closes. And I still remember the top comment on it, which was, ha ha, he went back inside.
I'm telling you, it's like the most base lizard brain reaction, like in terms of comedy, where it's just like that is caveman funny shit.
Yeah,
where you're just like, he went back in.
The best, also,
you try to go out, you go back in.
The best thing that could ever happen in a prank video is that the prankster gets knocked out. Like those are the ones that are my favorite that I always remember.
Especially in a scenario like that where it's like his response was reasonable. His response to punch the thing coming out of the trash can.
Yeah.
No one is allowed to be mad at him for that.
Not a
jury in the world would convict him.
No. And he looked like he felt terrible about it, but that was just his like gut level, like, oh my God.
That guy has some like fucking lightning fast like emotional synapses where it goes from fear to punch to sorry like immediately. I have a clip of them meeting Valentina and then her pulling her first prank.
Fuck this horse whispering shit. Tony, Valentina. Valentina, Tony Soprano. And this, my Chiquita banana, is Pai Oh My.
She's beautiful.
There's no stopping this horse. She's going to go all the way to the breeders.
I also like that Ralphie cannot help doing racism to anyone that he's with or means.
Come here, Sac. I think I have something in my eye.
Let Dr. Ralphie have a look. The fuck? I can't believe you did this to me.
Oh, fuck. I can't believe you've done this.
I can't believe you did this.
Beautiful prank.
There's another great line.
That's so funny.
In that sequence where Ralphie says, "Fucko, where's the hose?" which is such a Joey Pants line to me.
Yeah, it really is. He was born saying "fucko." That was that was his first name until the age of three, and he changed it to Joey. Yeah, no, he's got the perfect face and voice for a guy who calls people fucko on a regular basis.
It's also That's a great misdirect because like the idea that Ralphie is dating a woman who is constantly pranking him, like you think that that storyline is going to be like, oh, he's obviously going to kill her.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But
what's great about it is that like instead, as we dig further into this relationship, or at least dig into how Ralphie feels about this relationship, he like readily says, I'm going to have to marry this girl. He loves her. And it fits in so perfectly with his sexuality. Cause of course he loves someone who like keeps humiliating him regularly. Like, it's just like every time she pulls a prank on him, he gets more horny about it. And, you know, it just works. It works for him, which, you know, God bless him. You know, sometimes, you know, you find the perfect girl out there who just, you know, she hits all the good spots. And then you go and you jerk yourself off in the bathroom.
Yeah.
But,
and she decides,
of course, Tony,
she quickly decides that, well, that's the other thing about, you know, having a Gumar is that, if you're Ralphie, you clearly are fucking someone who wants to fuck like a captain. But, you know, you can't take her to meet the boss of all bosses without her obviously wanting to fuck that guy now. Because she's clearly attracted to that part.
You got to be really secure in your relationship with your Gumar to, like, introduce them to Tony. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that to me, I can't imagine being that secure. In like, real relationship.
Now I'm one because now that makes me wonder, did Ralphie on some level know this would happen? And he like because he gets off on being humiliated. Did he think that Tony would make a move?
Maybe like him being cucked was part of it. Like maybe. I mean, who knows?
I like to think that, you know, Ralphie's kind of like the he's kind of like a foppish dandy. He's sort of the clothes horse of the whole crew. And so in his mind, he probably thinks that these women like him because he's like so stylish and sharp and sophisticated. And he probably thinks like, oh, of course if she's attracted to me, there's no way she's going to be attracted to this fat slob with a leather in a leather jacket. But he's missing his
power she's into. It's the ascot. That's what's bringing him around.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good ascot. Looks good on him, dude.
I've never seen anyone else pull off an ascot. That's for sure.
He's very good at it, you know? That's why he's he's a good earner, because people see the ascot, and the ascot is respect. Yeah, you know?
That's right.
It's part of it. But, so she obviously immediately wants to fuck him and takes him, you know, to a guy who's going to paint his horse, which is, leads to much more interesting scenes later in the series. Mm-hmm. But for now, you just see it as an excuse to be alone with Tony. Tony, of course, immediately jumps on it.
I gotta think.
And then she pulls her second prank.
That's a very like pre-financial crisis grift, is painting rich people's horses. Like, he's probably doing great.
Yeah.
And then nowadays
it's just making an NFT out of a horse's image. You know, like that's.
Sure.
That's the future of like financial high art grifts. But her whole like job is she's like an art dealer or some shit, or she runs a gallery.
But then later we see her working at a frame store. So like unclear exactly like what she's doing.
I think that's wonderful. I love that she works at a frame store, but she's like, I'm an art dealer. You know, it's like, that sounds about right. It's, that's how you would frame yourself, pun intended.
So then Tony fucks her, and then she seems like a daredevil because she's pranking Ralphie, who's obviously like a homicidal sociopath. And then she's fucking with Tony's food. And I don't know, like just speaking for myself, the worst type of prank you could ever do to me is like fuck with my food, or like make me waste like a plate of food that I'm all excited to dig into. Yeah. Like nothing would make me hate you more.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It's a daring, daring prank. She does the loosen the salt cap and make them put salt on something and spill it all over their shit, which is not only like daring in terms of like he might get mad at you, but also daring in terms of just heart disease. I mean, that dude is not a healthy dude.
Yeah.
giving him a sodium bomb. Look at him. He's not going to not eat the steak. He literally just takes a knife and he like spreads it. He's just like, oh, spread it like butter.
It's
Jesus Christ.
It's a prank for an audience of one. I mean, usually like the goal of a prank is there's like a group around and you can all have a laugh about it. But when it's you and one other person and you piss off that other person with no audience around, woo.
Yeah, you're just laughing at your own joke at that point.
I saw recently one of the worst prank videos that I've seen. It was a guy at a driving range. And right as he is about to hit the ball, his bro-ass friend just throws a bottle of mustard, and he ends up hitting the mustard, and it splatters everywhere. And that dude is, the guy who throws it is laughing his ass off. And then they pan around with the camera, and everyone's angry at him. And no one's laughing. And I'm just like, I want to see, like, they should have kept this video going. Like, I want to see that laughter die down and turn into shame at some point, you know? Because, like that is just, oh, that's, it's, again, it pranks for no one. It's pranks for yourself. And I feel like that is
doesn't
weird.
Feel shame. That's never going to happen. No. That person's
Yeah, there is no justice in the world. The people like that are always going to fucking do those pranks, and they're always going to laugh, and it's only going to be for them. And, you know, good for them. I love the freedom of that, to not care what anyone thinks and just to do horrible shit to people.
Doing it for the love of the game, purely.
Love of the game. Unfortunately for Valentina, turns out the joke's on her. So she's been getting pranked this whole time in this relationship with Ralphie, because Ralphie does not fuck. He likes to be humiliated. He likes to get fucked. He likes weird shit to happen to him. And now being in that relationship with Ralphie is precluding her from getting into a relationship with a higher ranking mafioso in Tony. And Tony tries to break it off with a necklace, in which I love when he changes the card.
Scene. Yeah, you think he's reconsidering breaking up with her, but he actually just changed love Tony to regards or sincerely.
Best or something. Which is a fantastic little misdirection, because he doesn't, you know, he mostly just wanted to, you know, he just wanted to claim her for that moment, knowing that he could, and then kind of fucking move on from there. He was not interested in continuing, especially because Ralphie was involved. And that's when Tony finds out from Valentina that Ralphie's got a bunch of weird kinks.
Ralph does not have sex like other people, regular people. Ralph is loco, for real, okay?
He just makes me do stuff, not really even sexual.
Like last night, I just wanted him to fuck me just so I can get back at you. But all he wanted me to do was drip candle wax on his balls.
And then he went into the bathroom and jerked himself off.
Now, I don't call that having sex with someone.
Oh, Jesus H. Christ.
Last week, I swear to God,
he told me to rub his dick raw with the cheese grater.
Get the fuck out of here.
I wouldn't do it.
I told him to fuck off.
You just, you know, he's got a bunch of weird kinks. And now Tony is interested. You know, Tony is like, I got to know more about this.
Well, if there's penisary contact with Volvo,
he needs to know if there's penisary contact with Volvo. And he starts like asking around.
But Gandolfini is doing incredible face acting in that scene too. Mm. When he's reacting to these things she's saying, his face is a very convincing, like, I don't know what you're talking. This is so beyond what I am capable of understanding. And how does it fit into whether or not we can fuck? What's going on here?
Yeah,
it's also it's a very male relationship, because someone could be like your closest male friend, and then you find out that they have some weird kink, and you're just like, I had no idea. It's just you can be really good friends with dudes and not know any of their weird sex things,
which is weird for me, because it's just like. Like, I want to know that stuff. That's how I get close to people, is I tell them about quicksand porn, you know? I tell them about eating butts and fucking a silicone butt. It's like, that's how I relate, you know? But some people, like, they just keep that shit close to the vest, which is probably an appropriate thing to do at a workplace. But I guess I'm just a rebel like that, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, he's now asking around and trying to find out more information. And in one of my favorite scenes, I think this might actually be my favorite, he asks Syl. And, you know, like, he just, it's the first time he's ever talked about this publicly out loud. And he asks the initial question to Syl. And Syl gives the greatest answer fucking ever.
Let me ask you a question. The grouse a little weird about women?
I don't know, Tom. I mean, he beat one to death. Just for, I forget. Why was it again?
One of the greatest scenes in Sopranos history, probably.
I mean, he's such a good consigliere, dude. He's really good. Like, that's exactly, like, he just immediately went there. He's Tom, I don't know, Tony.
Not for nothing, but, you know, he did beat one to death.
Yeah. Not just like for what? Why was that again? Why did he do it? As if there is an excuse like out there that makes sense, you know? Yeah, just fantastic Syl work. You know, props to Syl, always coming in the clutch. And then he's going through and he's asking Melfi about it, and it becomes clear in the scene where he's talking to Melfi about this that he is like, he's kind of, I don't know, I feel like whatever happened to plain old fucking is his new whatever happened to Gary Cooper.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I feel like that when I watch the porn nowadays.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I'm very vanilla, yeah. You know, and I don't like it. Like, I like it when the girl is, like, nice to the penis, you know, but now all they ever do is try to shove it as far down their throat as they possibly can, and there's, like, all sorts of spit and stuff, and it's like, I'm always, like, yeah. I feel like Tony. I'm like, hey, whatever happened to just, like, a nice blowjob?
Yeah, whatever happened to a nice, polite blowjob, like the French used to do?
I like, you know, a
nowadays
polite
people
blowjob.
Are gagging. Now, how
Please
come vomit
thanks.
Is included? Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's it definitely is like for Tony, who probably in some way has kind of like he has this thing where he has like a traditionalized Catholic view of sex, and that includes like titty fucking Gumars. You know, like he's put that in there. That's still like something Jesus is somewhat okay with, you know, at least on some level. But he draws the line at like this S&M stuff. And so he's, and
This is the scene where Melfi talks about cucking, right?
Yeah.
And now I don't know about y'all, but I feel like I didn't know about cucking until like 3 years ago. So to see that, yeah. Like, I feel like The Sopranos is so ahead of the curve on so much of this stuff, like, bottoming from the top also seems like something that you could have seen on Twitter yesterday, but like in 2003, Janice is just saying this after she irons some 8x10s onto a giant t-shirt. That's amazing.
That's such a great sight gag, is that she's making a t-shirt with Bobby and he's so big that you can fit both kids side by side. Like, that's just another perfect David Chase fat joke. Like, you know he was behind that somehow.
Yeah.
He just hires these people so he can constantly make fat jokes about them.
Yeah. He needs more fat people in his life just so he can just ridicule them and then watch them die too young. It's David Chase's favorite thing to do.
But in that Melfi sequence, I think it's funny that she's like tries to get out of the conversation when he starts talking about his like Gumar too much. And that was sort of an open question for me. Like, is that her being jealous? Like, why? Like, she's always like she's trying to dig and get him to reveal everything. But all of a sudden he starts going into like sex stuff and his mistress. And she's like, you know what? I got to get out of here. I got another patient.
That's interesting, because I just assumed that it was just because of the other patient that she was like, we got to wrap this up. But it's possible that he, you know, is, you know, that she maybe is into him and is feeling uncomfortable or guilty, or I don't know. I'm not sure. I just saw it as like, you know, Tony is always just kind of rolling on his own schedule. And Sometimes that includes other people's psychiatric time.
She's kind of like a battered wife of therapists, though. Like, she's constantly making excuses for Tony. Everybody's always telling her to drop him as a client. Like, he basically, like, you know, threatens to beat her up multiple times, and she still hangs in there.
Yeah, she's still like, I can fix him. You know, it's very... it's true, and definitely
she's Carmella if she read too many books, you know.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, no, you might be right. Maybe that was her reasoning behind it, but all in all, it's one of the therapy scenes that I enjoy because it's kind of a self-aware scene of therapy because you got Melfi once again saying like it probably has something to do with the mother being very controlling, and he's just like, is everything really have to do with our fucking mom? And she gives this look like, yeah, that's kind of what the whole practice of psychotherapy is based on.
And she's,
I don't know,
like,
any other way.
Are you the one to ask that question? Are you questioning whether or not it's about your mom, Tony?
Tony might just be surprised that he's not the only one with a terrible mother.
Well, it's also it's a good therapy scene because it's not about like plumbing the obvious subtext of previous scenes. Like, Tony is in there with a purpose, which is like he wants to find out whether Ralphie's and this girl have fucked, and that's his only purpose in there. And they're both like playing each other, and those are the best therapy scenes on the show, is when they're both playing each other in some way.
And it's not just kind of like rehashing previous scenes, but with, like, I don't know, with the writer kind of like giving you their insight into, or explaining to you what art they're doing. It leads to Tony attempting to play Freud with Ralphie, which is a great scene in and of itself, just like as a self-contained scene, because you really get to see Tony for the first time psychoanalyzing Ralphie without, like, I don't know, he does it kind of slyly, because the first thing that happens is Adriana comes in and Ralphie immediately is like, ah, hon, you forgot my olives. You should know what your regular customer's like. And she's like, fuck off, you know, you're not my regular customer. And then Tony is like, why are you messing with her? And he's like, oh, no, it's banter, which is a great, I think that's a great excuse. We're doing banter. You know, I call her a cunt. She gets mad. Everyone has fun. It's like Seinfeld. But Tony says, I don't think she likes it, or you. And it's like Tony is seeing, like, I don't think this guy understands women.
Well, it's great that, like, this all took place not because Ralphie beat a stripper to death outside of the strip club. Like, he never really questioned Ralphie's weird sex thing until now, when he's trying to find out whether they're having sex with the same girl. Like, that was the inciting event, not any of the other stuff.
It's like, no, seeing someone beat their Gumar to death is something that I can put in this, like, you know, kind of normal column for the mafia. But you liking to get fucked in the ass, you know, with a gun is that's a bridge too far for Tony.
Tony's doing so much psychological work to determine whether or not he can have sex with this person based on Ralphie, a person he hates, but his wife never even enters, like, that's not a part of the equation at all.
No.
But like, respect and property and so forth.
Yeah, and there's also part of me, and this isn't made clear at all, this is just my own theory, but there's part of me that is wondering if maybe this will make him gay by the transitive property, you know, like, is it gay to fuck someone who used to fuck someone who's like doing some gay shit? Like, there's part of me that thinks that any mafioso, like, any kind of sexual proclivity that's not in, like, the normal lanes of sex is possibly gay. Like, you know, like Cunnilingus there's a whole episode where they're just like, is it gay to go down on a girl? And it's like, you know, so there's part of him that thinks, like, maybe this makes me gay if I keep seeing Valentina. Like, I don't know. That's my own personal theory.
But then we got to talk about the I want to say the best storyline because they're all good in this episode. But you know, Polly and Nucci, it's again, The Sopranos is way ahead of the curve because, you know, maybe like a month ago, I just watched that documentary about the Villages retirement community. And it, basically the whole thing is that the retirement community is like college, but for retirees, and everybody's got the same cliques and shit. And this is exactly the same, where like Nucci is being harassed by the mean girls of her retirement community.
I know. And it's so sad because, like, you know, Nucci is, she's so helpless. She's so helpless. Like the opening scene with Nucci. I have a clip of that opening scene.
So if there's anything you need, anything at all, you just press this button.
Which one?
This one that I'm showing you.
Safety first.
Paulie, did they bring my bath mat?
The fifth time, Ma. Yes.
I love, you're like, which one? This one right here. I'm showing you the button. And she's so helpless that she can't follow the button.
Yeah.
Like, pressing a button is literally the only way Life Alert works, and that's for anybody.
Reminding me so much of my grandma. Just like the willful misunderstanding. You can tell they're just doing it for more attention somehow. Like, they actually understand, but they're like willfully pretending not to.
Because it's The Sopranos, like, even though it's very sad that she's being bullied and she's this old lady, they have to make sure you know that, like, but she kind of sucks. Like,
yeah.
That there's
a
reason.
Yeah.
It's not like they decide, they just don't want to hang out with her because she's a pain in the ass. Yes. Like, the same reason you don't want to hang out with your Nucci is the same reason these women, she makes them feel old because she's always doing old lady shit.
Yeah. Which is one of the my favorite Polly moments too in this episode. Polly's, it's just such a good Polly episode. But like, Polly, you know, is very defensive of the fact that Min and Cookie both are like trying to get her to not sit with us. And she's like, he's very, very mad at them about this and can't understand it because it's his sweet old mother. But in that scene where the woman who runs Green Grove just tells him like all the problems with Nucci, it's so good. I have a clip of that.
Your mother's going to have to learn to accept responsibility for her own behavior.
Like what? Go ahead.
For one thing, she cries a lot. She's always in tears. At mass, in the exercise room. At music appreciation.
She's got a big heart.
Let me finish. She doesn't always put her teeth in. The girls don't like that.
This is not good.
Right. Also, she's a tattletale. She tells on the other girls for the slightest infraction. She's just not very adept at making friends.
This is not good.
It's so good. And then part of the reason that I liked that documentary about the Villages so much was that... like when old people are interacting and they don't like someone, like they've lost they don't feel the need to put on airs anymore. They're like, I don't have to waste my time with people that I don't like anymore. And that's so this episode, like those two women are just like, no, we've lived too long. We don't need to, we don't need to put up with like people that just suck the energy from you anymore.
Yeah. And in all fairness, they are right. They're right about that. I mean, you know, like when I think it's Min or Cookie, I forget, I get them confused, is like saying, you know, I've earned the right to not hang out with people that I don't like. I can't argue with that as much as it pains me because Nucci seems like such a poor, helpless woman. But you realize you know, this is all a thing that she is. She's just like this. No one wants to be near this. Yeah.
And that's why that blackjack scene is great, because it just shows how like, ugh, you fucking ruined my blackjack. Like, your presence made this experience worse because you don't understand this game or something. Yeah. I don't have time for this.
And that's such a fucking gambler thing too, is that you have ruined like the magic that makes them get the correct card because you have played it correctly. Because it's like you're drawing cards at random, but still you're playing woulda, coulda, shoulda with other people on the fucking table.
To get back to that scene, Polly, the face he makes when he finds out that his mom is a snitch is wildly funny.
Yeah,
it's like him just saying this is not good after learning about the teeth is one thing, but that face was like both like shock at how could my mother be like this, but also a realization of like, oh my God, I have a big mouth. My mother has a big mouth. This shit is hereditary. Like knowing that these genes have been passed on, that they both do not know when to shut the fuck up. And and that's gotta, you know, that's gotta hurt a little bit. But great, great acting by Paulie Galtieri, whatever his real name is. Tony Sirico?
Yeah.
Is that his real name?
Yeah. Right.
Great acting by Tony Sirico. And then finally, I mean, let's get into just the Carm stuff real quick.
The telltale Carmella press on nail, as I called this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is it's deeply intertwined with Carmella, with Valentina, and Tony in that, like, Carmella wants to get financial independence. This has been a whole season's worth of this, which... I mean, I just got to say to anyone who's watching along with the podcast, season 5, you want to see peak Edie Falco fucking storylines and acting? Season 5. I got to say season 4 is way, way too focused on the fucking financial bullshit. It's interesting, but it's also, you don't see Edie Falco at her like peak of her brilliance. The stuff with Furio is great, but this shit I don't care about. But she goes and you know, she finds you know, Valentina's whorish nail, the telltale nail.
Which, by the way, and, it's also telltale because any woman with nails that long, you know, is completely fucking crazy. Like, you will never meet a non-crazy woman with nails that long.
They're, you know, they're becoming relatively normalized now. So I think, like, back in the day, that was just a whorish nail.
That one
now
even I know had, people, like, Swarovski crystals on it and shit.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it's whorish, but it's definitely like you're a crazy person.
Well, I think she's just an early adopter, and I think she's totally normal. Pranking clingers. But yeah, so she then spends the rest of the time trying to take money from the bird feed, and she eventually succeeds.
And does the whole, the whole passive aggressive thing she does is just fucking perfect. Like the fact that she steals, like, at first you think she's gonna dump water on Tony in the shower like a you know, like a child, but she's like, no, I do way higher level pranks, which is that I'm gonna steal this money, not tell him I've stolen this money, and then wait to see whether he will bring up the fact that I stole the money. Like, that is just...
But also, leave the nail where I know leave he will nail. See it. Yes. So everybody somewhere, knows what's going on, but no one's going to say that, anything.
Yeah, that master conspicuously level. Conspicuously placed piece of evidence of your infidelity just right on the bedstand. Like, say something, bitch. And she's being sweet. She's like, he asks, like, oh, I was thinking about decaf. And she's like, I can make decaf. What do you want to talk about, Tony, you fucking cheating bitch? And
because really, all she asks is for so little, where it's like, yeah, like, I know you have Gumars. Just be smart enough not to leave the fucking evidence in your pocket, you fat piece of shit.
Yeah,
I love in that scene when AJ comes in and he sits in it for like, he just sits in it for like 1 minute and is like, you guys are being insane. I need to leave the room.
He nopes the fuck out of there so fast. Did you see the pool boy? I'm out. I don't know what this is about, but all I know is learning about it will be traumatic. So he nopes the fuck out, and then there's this quiet standoff. Neither, you know, this is almost like a kind of a similar ending to Employee of the Month, where they just we end on a no, you know, and just like nothing, not talking about it, you know, fucking cone of silence.
Yeah,
no need to talk about it. But
there's also you know, Furio. Yeah. Honestly, I'm so over the fucking Furio, whether him and Carm are gonna hook up storyline at this point. I do not care at all. Even his uncle or whatever was right. He's like, yeah, dude, fucking.
It was worth it. It's worth it for that uncle, though. That was a great scene. That uncle just like, I mean, he says one of the most brilliant lines that I think I even asked my dad about if this was true. Where he said he lived a good life, you know. He fucked a lot of women, and that's all you can really hope for, you know. And I think at one point I did say to my dad, like, do you ever just think back about different women that you've had sex with and been like, you know, I did pretty good? And he was like, yeah, everything before your mother was a waste of time. But he's depressed, so he says stuff like that. I thought that was a great line. And his immediate turn after, he's like, oh, run to the if you are in love, run to the woman. Mm. And he's like, it's the boss's wife. And he's like, what the fuck is the matter with you?
You are fucking stupid as shit.
Fozo.
1 minute ago, he established the only measure of a good life is how many chicks you bang. And then he's immediately like, do not bang this chick. Yeah. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, there's a lot of other girls out there, man.
Yeah. If all of the stupid shit I've done in my life, I have never thought to be that fucking dumb. Like, oh, and yeah, he gives him the best advice. And he's like, let it go. Don't let it get, you know, no harm done. And then he implants the, you know, the only way you could get away with it is if you killed him, which I feel deserved the follow up, because he should have said, which of course you can't do, because then you will also die. So. Mm-hmm. Case closed. But instead,
I think he could get away with it if he did it. It's just having that kind of boldness.
I mean, you have to be pretty bold to kill a boss just to fuck his wife. But then you got to run off with the wife. I mean, it seems like the logistics. Yeah, it's a logistical nightmare. And then you got to hope that Carm's cool with it. It's too much.
Well, yeah, he knows
but,
that.
Let's get into favorite, least favorite before we hop on out of here. Let's see, Vince, did you have a favorite? You have a least favorite?
I mean, that's easy. I mean, I had a lot of favorites, but definitely I think the top, at the top with a bullet, is Syl being, you know, is he weird with women? Well, he did beat one to death. It's a fantastic
top
line.
Of the bullet.
Least favorite, overall, I loved this episode top to bottom. The only weird thing I thought was just the way that they begin that dinner scene, where it's like there's like a weird close-up on a painting of Italy, like you think they're going into a dream sequence.
I didn't really
get it, but it didn't like ruin anything for me, but it was just odd.
Same favorite and same least favorite, just because I was confused by kind of the filmmaking. I was just like, because they had that Italian you know that song. But also,
that's all Italian song.
To not repeat yours, one of the things I love, it's not a scene, but it's kind of like a theme or motif almost that they do, it's the Sopranos singing in the shower. It's just a nice little touch to know they both sing in the shower. Yeah. Like, you've got Carmela singing the fucking Italian song and probably dreaming about Furio. And you've got Tony singing, we don't need no do-da-dee-da. We don't need no thought control. Like, I love that he's a Pink Floyd guy. I love it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Brent, do you have a favorite, least favorite?
I think my favorite scene that we haven't talked about really is the scene with Janice, how Tony asks her about Ralphie's sex, and she immediately establishes a moral high ground.
Yes.
When it's clear she just wants a high ground so that she can leverage this for money. And Tony's little nod. Yeah. He's like, oh, game recognized game. Like, how did you come to $3,000? And she says, I thought you'd say yes. And he says, you're right. Go ahead.
You're right. Yeah.
Incredible.
There really was a game recognized game moment in there where it's routine where he's like, all right, you do the thing where you pretend to be outraged about me even asking. Then you're going to get some money from me. Then I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. It's pretty brilliant.
And then
least
favorite, I don't know, the scene with the like Gumar dinner, I was just confused because it's like, it's not Vesuvio, I don't know who these women are, but it seems like the Parisi is talking to this lady like, we've been together 25 years, so it's like, are you with your wife and everyone else is with their Gumar,
right?
Like, it just didn't really
I didn't even think about
sense.
That that's a very good point.
No, you're right. I think that was Parisi has been with his Gumar for a long period of time, and I think he brings it up at Melfi's office when he talks about kind of like,
oh, maybe that's what that was a reference to. Okay. Yeah.
You know, people who have like multiple families, or I forget how he put it, but you know,
he's got two families and his one wife busts his balls identical to the first.
Yeah. I think he's talking about Patsy Parisi in that. And that was, to me, is, you know, it was an interesting scene. 'Cause I just like, I like banter. I like when mafiosos sit around and just banter with each other. But it also was confusing. I agree completely. Real gangster of this episode is, people who enjoy pranks. I think we can all agree. There was no 9/11 in this episode. So, Brent, I'm sorry. If you want to say who you think did 9/11.
Yeah, do you want my an answer. I think by not getting on the plane and preventing 9/11, effectively Mark Wahlberg is responsible for 9/11.
Oh yeah.
That's a good call. Shit.
Yeah.
That is a good call.
Yeah. His negligence led to those buildings coming down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Damn. Good. That's a fucking good point.
You know, Mark Wahlberg, Seth MacFarlane was supposed to be on that plane originally.
Add him to the list.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn.
He didn't fly that.
A lot of people should have died. Not that I want him to die, but should have, because, you know, it's only fair. Mark Wahlberg, Seth MacFarlane, you're both canceled again for not stopping 9/11. And all in all, I give this episode solid B+. What about you guys? What do you give this
episode? That's a tough one. A lot of good stuff, not a lot of bad stuff. Basically, my favorite episode of the season so far. Yeah, solid B+, I think.
Yeah.
It's the only, as far as I know, the only Sopranos episode where someone is called a malignant cunt, so it gets points for that.
I like the idea her cuntiness could metastasize.
Yeah. No, it spread to her lymph nodes.
For those reasons, solid B+.
Solid B+. All right. Well, solid B+ of an episode of The Sopranos. Solid A++ of an episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Brent Flyberg, thanks so much for coming out from behind the pod camera and coming to be a guest on the show you work on.
A dream come true. I've also been a film drunk reader since I was in college, so this is pretty cool for me. Yeah,
you're living the dream. You're working with Vince Mancini. You're talking about Sopranos.
Every boy's dream.
Pretty cool. I gotta have lower stakes. my big dream is to work with my favorite blogger. I'm just kidding, Vince. Vince, you're a genius film critic, and check out my Twitter to see my favorite Vince Mancini poll quotes from Rotten Tomatoes. And that has been our episode. Before we get out of here, we have a couple of new Pod Yourself a Shout Out patrons. First, Vince, is Zach Peppel.
Oh, Zach Peppel, Zach Morris, Zach the Preppy. We call him Bayside, because he's Zach Attack. We call him Bayside.
We call him Bayside. That's both.
He's got a lot of nicknames, old Zach.
Oh, old Zachy Bayside, Zach Attack. We call him the anti-Semite because he keeps beating up Screech. finally, we have, and this is from Zach Peppel to his good friend Amy Boyer. He bought her a shout out as well.
Love that.
Yeah,
Amy Boyer.
Isn't that nice? She's a first grade teacher, and she apparently listens to the show, loves the show. So Amy Boyer, what's her nickname?
Amy Boyer. Amy Boyardee. We call her the chef.
That's pretty good. That's good.
Yeah, well, you know,
I mean, you can keep going.
Well, sure. I was just going to bring up Frank Stallone complaining that Chef Boyardee was offensive to Italians, and it was like, just everything about it. He had this whole screed that where he got everything wrong, because like Chef Boyardee is like based on a real guy who was named Boyardee. Mm. Like he's like, he is not offensive to Italians at all. That's not even a caricature. He's like a proud immigrant success story.
That's a real guy. You can't just...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why. Like sometimes when people do like anti-Semitic like Jewish names, so, like, they're trying to be, you know, they'll be like, oh, Mr. Shlomo Goldberg over here. And I'm like, actually, I know Shlomo. That's like, I know a couple Shlomo Goldbergs. Yeah. They're good people. So, yeah, that's patreon.com/fraughtcast for the $8 tier pod, yourself a shout out. You get a cool nickname, and go ahead, feel free to buy some shout outs for your friends, even if they don't listen to the podcast. Wouldn't it be fun to just hear their names? Patreon.com/fraughtcast. Fraughtcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, concerns. Vince, what's the Google voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing.
Cool. I'm going to send those time codes now and then bounce. Thanks again for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.